Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we sit down with Alex Engelman, the Chief Executive Officer of Millennial Esports, one of the pioneers in the esports business, on how the industry would work with casinos for the benefit of each. The GGB podcast is brought to you by UNLV's Gaming and Hospitality Education Series. Don't miss episode 3 on May 17th, which will feature a discussion of data analytics, including a presentation by David Norton, the former CMO of Caesars Entertainment, about his recent book, The High Roller Experience, How Caesars and Other World-Class Companies Are Using Data to Create Unforgettable Customer Experience. To register and for more information, visit unlvghes.com. When considering how esports could work with the casino industry, there are many different opinions. Is it a venue? Is it an event? Is it a wagering opportunity? Alex Engelman has been operating an esports business, trading on the Toronto Stock Exchange for the past several years, and opened an esports arena in Las Vegas in 2016. Millennial Esports understands the gaming market and its connection to Las Vegas and the casino industry overall. He spoke with me during the Indian Gaming Trade Show in Las Vegas in April. Alex Engelman, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. It's good to see you. We met a few weeks ago at the esports event in Mandalay Bay. So
That's right.
I'm glad we can get together and talk about esports. To tell you the truth, I'm pretty clueless about it. So if I ask some really silly questions, please forgive me.
Thank you for having me, and by all means, feel free to ask away.
Well, let's start with your company, Millennial Esports. You've been here in Vegas for over a year now.
Mm-hmm.
I was in there when it first was under construction, and then again when it opened, and a very impressive facility. So explain about your company, how you got started, and where you are now.
Sure. So the company is actually a public company. Mm-hmm. We trade on the Toronto Stock Exchange, okay, Venture Exchange, under the symbol GAME. We also now trade on the NASDAQ.
Okay, GAME. That's a nice symbol.
Yeah. Unfortunately, our NASDAQ symbol is MLLLF.
Okay.
So it's a different
it's a little
one.
Difficult.
Yeah. But that was assigned to us. But having said that, we are Toronto based. We're actually in the process of moving our operations more to the West Coast here. Mm-hmm. Specifically in Los Angeles and in the surrounding area. We came to Las Vegas probably about 2.5 years ago, and at that time the company was primarily a tournament organizer, mm-hmm, and we had what's called a competitive gaming platform, which really allowed people to play games against each other,
mm-hmm,
and in effect, for fun or for money,
okay,
because it was skill gaming,
mm-hmm,
and that was the original model. So we had built something, and there was other competitors at the time, but we really felt that we built a unique engine. That company was called Pro Gaming League, and it was founded by a young gentleman from Toronto who was a gamer.
Okay.
Eventually, I acquired that company, and that's really the formation of Millennial Esports. We went public in October of 2016, and the rest is history. Our first thing we did, really, was we identified Las Vegas early on,
mm-hmm,
as the perfect place for esports. Probably one of the first people to do that, aside from one of our board members, Seth Shore,
sure,
or Downtown Grant.
Right, right.
We built this arena in downtown Las Vegas. It's the first of its kind, and again, purpose-built for esports. But the company has evolved quite significantly since that time.
Okay. Did you identify Vegas just because it's a town where everybody gathers, or because of the gambling aspect of it as well?
I think both. I think in the back of our mind, we knew that esports had already been really, on the wagering side,
right,
a very active market around the world, maybe not so much in North America,
mm-hmm,
but we knew that one day it would be, you'd be able to walk up to a book and make a, mm-hmm, a wager on an esports bet. So we wanted to be in Las Vegas,
right,
and as well for all the other reasons that makes Vegas,
sure,
an amazing entertainment
city. Right.
So I became aware of esports and gaming kind of getting together about 7 or 8 years ago. There was a tournament at the Cosmopolitan
in
Las Vegas, and I forget who it was, but a woman said, "You got to come out and check this out." So I did, and I was pretty amazed. It was thousands of kids in the kids. Everybody below 20 is a kid for me, below 30 for that matter. There's all these kids in this meeting and convention space at the Cosmopolitan, and of course you walk into the ballroom and there's it's packed with more than 1,000 people watching people play. And, not being an esports aficionado myself, I was pretty amazed at that. And of course everything was gibberish to me when the announcer was talking and things of that nature. But I certainly immediately saw the possibilities of it, if for nothing else but a special event. So, what did you see when you first came to Vegas when you opened your esports arena downtown? And it's in the Neonopolis, right?
That's right. It's at Neonopolis, 450 Fremont Street, right downtown on the third floor, former theaters. one of the things we identified was that Las Vegas did have an active scene, you're correct, and that was shut down a few years after that event. At the time, it was actually before really Twitch took off and streaming and esports hadn't really made it mainstream here. So it was more of a novelty event, but there's no question that some of the early adopters having events here in Las Vegas years ago were the pioneers. They had pulled back. No one had ever built an arena. Obviously, these were purpose-built things.
Sure.
So we had seen that Vegas was ripe for it and that it had embraced it at one point. And so we wanted to revive that. Mm-hmm. And, today our company is a much more different company than it was, say, a year and a half ago.
Right.
We're really a publisher today. Mm-hmm. We bought a racing game developer out of Lyon, France, and now we're really in the racing space. And I can get more into that at another point.
Yeah, I want to talk about the actual business of esports because that's obvious. I mean, it's a billion-dollar industry now. You can see how you make money at esports. My question is how does it connect with the casino industry? I know there's a lot of different levels. Let's start it at just as an event. What does it bring to a casino if you have an esports event at your casino?
Roger, that's a great question because a lot of people are trying to figure out, especially in this industry, how to really monetize or take advantage of esports.
Right.
So I think as an event is really the easiest way for a casino or operator to get involved. I think if executed properly, and that means there has to be some authenticity to it. You're not going to give a 50-year-old event manager at your hotel who's been working there for 30 years that ability, but someone that you bring in that understands esports. I think from an event perspective, there's an opportunity, obviously, to make money. As you would holding any event. So really, in that regard, you're trying to attract a demographic that you haven't really experienced at your casino before, and therefore, there's that dual purpose.
Right. Now, of course, then there's the next level where you can get into the tournaments, I guess, and attract people there. You can almost hold a tournament as you might a poker tournament, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, there's some capital expenditures
there.
Yep. If the casino wanted to have a permanent facility, otherwise there's numerous tournament organizers, in the city and elsewhere that could assist. So that would be sort of the next stage. Again, a really specialized sort of niche market. You really have to know what you're doing.
Right.
And it could be a loss leader for a number of years until the casinos really figure out the right model.
Right, right. Well, I'll talk about Seth Shore, what he did at Downtown Grand. And initially, they put it in a little room right off the casino floor. And then they moved it into another part of the hotel. And I thought, probably the slot players were distracted. And Seth told me, no.
Yeah.
The e-game players were distracted by the slot noise.
And that's right.
Yeah. So I guess those are the type of things you have to go through when you really get into this business.
Absolutely. And I think, Seth, there was a lot of trial and error there.
Sure.
They were pioneers like we were. And they,
sure.
They had moved it around. But ultimately, they found, the right location. And look, I think if you look at the demographic, I know it may be shocking to some people, but I think the average age of a gamer is somewhere in the, you know, depending on who you speak to, somewhere in the age of about 35.
Right.
So we're not talking about young kids. They're obviously a demographic that are valuable.
Sure.
And, so...
And they have some disposable income.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't think they're at the level where they're half retired right now, but you never know. I mean, they...
Absolutely. A lot of the sort of professional gamers are people that are really interested. And remember, right. there's a big group that also... enjoys participating from viewership as opposed to actually participating in the actual tournaments. And that age group is like I said, a little bit more elevated than you would think.
Right. So, as we mentioned, everybody's kind of still feeling their way around. I went to the eSports Arena at Mandalay, or at Luxor.
Yes.
Very good job. I thought they did an excellent job there.
Yes.
I mean, it looks... They've got the stadium seating, you know, for the tournaments. They've got individual stations.
That's
they've
right.
got you know, bars and restaurants inside bars anyway. And I think they might have missed the mark a little bit on the food with all the sushi. I don't know if esports people eat that, but I thought they did a great job there. A few weeks ago, they had a tournament, first tournament at the Caesars facility.
That's right,
which is in the back parking lot of Bally's, which is a long way from the casino hotel. So, and then they had no food in there. They had food trucks outside, so I'm a little confused about how they made it. Is it just that everybody's kind of feeling their way along here to find out what works for them?
I think so, and I think, you know, it depends on the risk that you want to really take.
Right.
I think, you know, Luxor, from what I understand, I don't know the details of the deal, but from what I understood, it, you know, the relationship with MGM is more of as a landlord, and so that would make sense. For them, they've done a great job. There's no question. Allied built a beautiful facility, and hopefully they will succeed because a rising tide lifts all ships.
Right.
But with regards to what happened what's going on at Caesars and the H1Z1 and Daybreak, again, that's a sort of a season long thing. And so, from what I understand, there was some issues there with the age of some of the players there, and so they had to, you know, accommodate them in the background. But again, these are all things that have to be thought through. And in time, they will develop.
Right. And I've talked to people who are experienced in esports, and they tell me that, you know, the best players are, you know, 15 to 20, 21 years old. So those are the most skilled players. And as you get older into the mid-20s and even into the 30s, your skills disappear.
That's right.
So
it's interesting. You know, you hear about a 21-year-old kid who has a repetitive strain injury and he has to retire.
Right. So my question, the next step, I guess, for casinos is wagering on skill games. I know in Nevada, they've approved certain events that they could accept wagers on, and I'm not really sure how successful that was in terms of how much betting they got and everything. But again, then you get to the position where, you know, some of these players are underage, you know, and so how do you allow that to happen? Then somebody, well, we do this in the Olympics too. You bet on the ice skaters and they're 15, you know.
That's right.
So I can, okay, let's get over that hurdle. How does it really work? And do you understand how it has worked in Nevada in terms of betting so far?
Very, very much so. So from what I understand, the you know, obviously Nevada being very progressive, there was a push to accept esports wagers, but instead of a blanket acceptance of any type of wager, obviously the Nevada Gaming Commission has put it in the same sort of categories, a special event like the Oscars.
Sure.
And so once they approve an event, then that event can be wagered on.
Yeah.
And so obviously that's not the most ideal situation. Mm-hmm. The most ideal situation would be eventually where esports, particular games and particular leagues would be accepted as, you know, sports which were allowed to be wagered on. And others wouldn't be. I mean, you wouldn't be able to wager against, you know, Boris and Sasha playing in Odessa a game of CS:GO. But you know, there's no question that if you're playing, you know, Team Optic and Cloud9 in a League of Legends tournament, well, that you know, they have those safeguards and the overall protection to ensure that there's some sort of fair play, which is what Nevada has to ensure.
Of course, right. And that's what my question was always, you know, how do you know if somebody threw a game? You know, I mean, of course, somebody unknown like I am, I have no idea. But other people tell me that there's metrics there, that there's analytics that you will know that something
absolutely
outrageous happened.
Yeah, I mean, look at the paper any day, especially in Europe or India. You see every day there's something about a cricket fix a tennis match. Now, you know, to be quite frank, the fact that all of the play actually takes place in a sort of digital format,
right.
That is very auditable. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of companies out there that have algorithms that can detect play that is not normal,
right.
Abnormal, and it allows referees or judges to actually look into it and see if there was match fixing and throwing.
Okay.
So in fact, I think it's actually easier to
yeah.
track that than say, how are you going to read someone's mind?
Sure, right.
You know, a key player that he was just
right.
you know, given a suitcase with $1 million.
Yeah, it's almost like the online gaming where you can track every move that they make. Same thing you can do with this.
So, absolutely.
So if they have those algorithms, you know, this player you know, made this move X amount of times, and suddenly they make a weird move. So,
exactly.
Okay. All right. So it is possible to actually wager on it. You know, if you have the control situation.
Absolutely. In fact, today there, you know, you go to any real high street bookmaker in the UK,
right.
Or any of the bigger offshore books. Esports wagering as a sector is now greater than hockey.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of a volume handle, and that excludes. Sort of the illegal or underground market where people are wagering on skins and
sure,
different
right,
things.
So
it is already a billion-dollar industry, mm-hmm. and it's really for Nevada to embrace and figure out how to, you know, how to bring it into the fold.
Right, and of course there's companies that do this, Unicorn being one.
Absolutely.
That accepts wagers on in certain jurisdictions.
In certain jurisdictions, Unicorn,
yeah.
You know, and they're doing some interesting moves with their Unicorn Gold and bringing in you know, crypto and Bitcoin and,
right.
and different things. So, blockchain.
So we're here at NIGA. I did a session yesterday on skill games, and a lot of the discussion was, you know, if you bring in an esports tournament, they're gonna gravitate to these skill games. Do you see any type of movement that esports players will ever get to the casino floor?
I think they would.
Yeah.
Whether or not they will, you know, gravitate towards skill games or some game,
or table games.
Or some game that has yet to be developed. I think I've mentioned this, you know, several times in certain blogs that I wrote. But I, you know, one of the things that I found really interesting this year was MGM was the seed investor in a company called Foundry 4,
mm-hmm.
which is developing a new game.
Right.
And obviously, as MGM being the seed investor, there will probably be some gamblification element.
Sure,
and
right.
if a game is designed ground up, that could be the game of the future.
Right, right. And that's the next point I wanted to get to. You mentioned you're now in the publishing business, and there's all these publishers of different games. I know League of Legends is published by a certain company, and
right.
they won't let anybody else use the game.
Right.
So does that complicate it more, or does that give the industry maybe a little opportunity, as you said, to develop their own games?
Yeah, I think both. So one of the things we realized early on was mm-hmm. the way to really make money in the esports world is as a publisher.
Yeah.
When you own the IP and,
sure,
and
right.
people are playing your game. I think maybe that's why MGM made that investment.
Right.
Because that was an investment.
Sure.
I don't know how much, but obviously they were the seed investor and it was announced. So that's interesting. I think on our end, we saw that racing, as an example,
mm-hmm.
was a very sort of untouched space. It
right.
was high growth, low clutter. And we focused on finding the right racing game developer.
Mm-hmm.
And we did so with a company called Eden Games in Lyon. We have an app, a game called
uh-huh.
Gear Club. And I believe that racing is really conducive to skill gaming and wagering. And I think in the future you may see sort of these racing areas where people are playing against each other or teams. And it's something that, you know, there's very little learning curve. Most
sure,
people know
right,
how to drive.
Sure, right.
And, you know, it's also non-contentious. There's no shooting. There's
right.
no violence.
And I think that's been a hurdle that the industry is going to, the casino industry is going to have to overcome because, you know, we know there's been violence involving the casino industry right now, and they don't want to even be seen as maybe condoning that type of thing.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, to bring that point home, earlier in late in 2017, we had an event at our arena
mm-hmm.
For Amazon
right.
Called the Mobile Masters, and they invited four different sort of game publishers to be there. One of the games is a shooting game.
Right.
The event happened to be a week after the
right.
unfortunate event here. That company was asked not to come.
Yeah.
The players were brought in because they won the trip, but they
right.
weren't. They didn't play. And so,
sure.
yeah, there is sensitivity. So I think that's a really important thing. And so one of the things you really got to look at is what the game is. You know, we talk about the Olympics wanting to accept, you know, bring in esports as a
right.
professional sport. But obviously, that's not going to be a game where you can blow someone's head off.
Of course, right, right. But, and you know, you mentioned the racing game, but I think one of the first tournaments you had was a Madden game.
Yeah, that's right. We actually won the first tournaments we had was at our play, and we had several Madden events at our place. We call that real esports, as opposed to, you know, sort of fantasy esports.
Sure.
We also had a Halo event. I mean, Halo, yes, it's a shooting game, but it's a little bit less, you know, it's less score, it's more science fiction.
Right. Yeah, right. So, what advice would you give to a casino that wants to attract this esports crowd and wants to take it step by step? How would you suggest that they get into it to begin with?
I think the first thing is that, you know, they should embrace that it's here to stay. And once they realize that it's not, you know, this is not a passing fad or fantasy, in my opinion, they should approach it cautiously. Mm-hmm. But each casino should really see where their biggest strengths are and then try to participate in the ecosystem that way. So, you know, this place being, we're sitting in the Hilton, the previous Las Vegas, the Westgate, and, you know, it's a great facility, great convention space. Potentially, this would be a great space. You know, the rooms are reasonable, so this would be a great space to have, say, like a week-long tournament or festival, and maybe something like you know, the Downtown Grand, or you know, working with us could have more of a local tournament with our arena. Right. But you know, overall, each casino really has to look at it, and I think ultimately, it's just a matter of getting the right people that understand the space to really guide the company.
Yeah. So even you think a local casino in you know, the Midwest or something like that, they could get into it if they understood their market, if they brought the right people in to conduct it.
Absolutely. I think, you know, in each game, each publisher and each game has their own real community. And so and sometimes you will find that there's enough of that local community.
Yeah.
You know, a game like League of Legends has 70 million active players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, many of those are in the U.S., not all of them, and many of those reside around a lot of these regional casinos. So, you know, to be able to attract those, people would want to have, you know, the ability to access a local tournament, maybe spend a weekend, and then those casinos that have, you know, various properties across the country, you can put together a tour with a publisher. So I think what has to happen is, you know, the casinos have to work directly with the publishers, mm-hmm. and then potentially as part of their sort of AV and specialty groups that do the setup, they can have a team that can put up, you know, an esports, you know, stage and understand that quite quickly. So that's what I would do.
So one of the things I noticed when I went to the Caesars event, the tournament there, there's really competition between the teams. You know, there were four or five member teams, and they were yelling at each other, and it looked like it was a lot of fun. You know, they were very passionate about what they were doing, so it's a real experience. So if you can, and casinos are all about creating experiences. So do you think this is something that they should really consider just because it's so special?
I think so. Look, I mean, you know, I've said this before, but it's no different than I think if you think about it from the sports side, as boxing was, say, in the 50s and 60s here, where boxing and then UFC took over, and again with what Allied's doing, that is a little akin to, you know, the nightclub industry when they first came to Las Vegas. So it took a while. Obviously, that, you know, the nightclub industry took off. There was a need. So I think once the right formula is found. And as one of my colleagues, Roy, says, the bubble, as he calls it, if you prepare the right bubble, then they will come.
Right. No question about it. Well, Alex, thanks for educating me. I appreciate it. I think I understand it a little better now. But we'd like to stay in touch and you know, continue to touch base with you and talk about, you know, how it's evolving, because I know it's going to evolve pretty quickly here.
Thank you very much, Roger. And like I said, I think you're going to be seeing some interesting things from Millennial, especially on the racing side. For all those that are here local in town, we set up a number of racing sims with our game at our arena. And we're sort of converting our arena to a little bit of a racing center. We offer daily cash prizes for free entry. People play the game and, you know, to bring awareness of our Game Gear Club, which is available for download on iOS and Android.
Great. Well, maybe I'll come down and check it out.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us on the GGB Podcast, sponsored by Southern Gaming Summit, May 2nd and 3rd in Biloxi, Mississippi. If you want to learn more about any of the information offered today, visit ggbmagazine.com. For weekly news of the gaming industry, visit ggbnews.com. And for news of the Indian gaming industry, visit tribalgovernmentgaming.com. Follow us on Twitter at Global Gaming Biz or on Facebook and LinkedIn at Global Gaming Business. We'll see you next week on the GGB Podcast.